Friends, I learned a new word a few months ago, and I've been just waiting for the chance to share it with you, mainly because I needed a sermon illustration, but also because I kind of want to see if I can try it out in my own life and see if I can get it to work for me. The word is retcon, R-E-T-C-O-N, retcon. It's a portmanteau of retroactive continuity, retcon. In 1978, I'll give you an example. This is actually the example from which I learned. In 1978, there was a horror movie. I know you all just flock to horror movies all the time. In 1978, there was a horror movie called Halloween. It had a monstrous ghoul chasing after Jamie Lee Curtis, who was playing a teenage babysitter or something. And that movie, Halloween, in 1978, was so successful that it spawned a sequel, and then another sequel, and then another sequel, and then there were two more sequels that ignored two of those previous sequels, but not all the previous sequels. Then they did more sequels for the 20th anniversary. Then they did a reboot, which means they went back to redo the original, which then they had a sequel to the reboot of the... Anyway, so last year, 2018, the 40th anniversary of the original one, Hollywood went back and got Jamie Lee Curtis to come back and play the same character she had played in the original one, but 40 years later, in real time, in other words, now a grandmother, you know, protecting her grandchildren and the world from the whatever, beast, ghoul, the bad guy. And but the problem is, over 40 years and, I don't, whatever, 10 sequels and remakes and so on, there'd been a lot, the story had gone all over the place, all kinds of sort of ridiculous angles and, revelations about who's who and everything. And so people say, you know, what does Hollywood do with all of those 40 years worth of tangled storylines? And the answer is this Hollywood creation of a word, which is retcon. Retroactive continuity. What it means is you ignore every single sequel and everything else that came out over the last 40 years, and you go back there, so they start a whole new, the 2018 movie starts as if nothing interesting else had happened in the lives of any of these people since the way they left the movie in 1978. I thought, that is a great idea. Retcon. Here's another example. When the TV show Cheers went off the air after 11 seasons, the producers of it decided to keep the world of those characters going by giving a new series to one of the most enduring characters from the Cheers show, a psychiatrist named Fraser Crane. Give him his own show and build a whole new situation comedy around Fraser. As they were constructing the new show around the character of Frasier, they said one thing they thought was really important was to have as a major character his dad. The only problem was that way back when he was a minor character on Cheers, part of his storyline was that he had lost his father some years earlier. What's the solution? Retcon. They didn't come up with a storyline to explain it. They didn't do anything. They just said, here's his dad. And if you went, well, wait, I thought his dad had passed away. Doesn't matter what you thought. Retcon. So, according to the official overarching narrative, what had been previously told as the official story was written out of existence. The story that had previously been stated was, to use the words of a White House administration 45 years ago, no longer operative. One of those questions for Lenten reflection formulated by Frederick Buechner was, of all the things that you have done in your life, which is the one you would most like to undo? Each one of us has episodes in our own life that we wish some writer would just go back and retcon right out of existence. Which reminds me of one of my favorite children's books of all time, and it's one of my favorites because children's books are supposed to have characters that children can relate to. And you may tell me I'm 51, but I'm still a child who likes to relate to the characters in stories. And I can relate. I would like to share with you the chronicle of a character created and drawn by Robert Quackenbush. The character is a duck named Henry. Not you, Henry. A duck. And I'd like to share with you the epic tale of Henry's awful mistake. And I'm sorry, I meant to have the book with me so I could show the pictures as I read. So I'll invite you to picture in your mind. I know what I'll do. The day Henry the Duck asked his friend Clara, no relation, over for supper, he found an ant in the kitchen. Henry was worried that Clara would see the ant. She might think the house was not clean. The ant had to go. Henry reached for a can of ant spray. It's a violent children's book. But he didn't want to spray near the food that he was cooking, so he chased the ant with a frying pan. Henry ran around the kitchen, chasing after the ant, but the ant got away and hid behind the stove. Henry took the food he was cooking off the stove, then he shut off the flame and pulled the stove away from the wall. He found the ant. The ant saw Henry and ran into a small crack in the wall. Henry went and got a hammer. Henry pounded a big hole in the wall where the crack was, but he couldn't find the ant, so he kept on pounding. The hole got bigger and bigger. At last, Henry saw the ant sitting on a pipe inside the wall. Henry aimed the hammer at the ant and missed. The blow of the hammer broke the pipe. Water came shooting out of the pipe. Henry couldn't stop it. Henry grabbed a towel. He tied it around the pipe, and the water stopped shooting out. But Henry hadn't stopped the water soon enough. It had sprayed all over the kitchen. Everything was soaking wet, except for Clara's supper. Thank goodness. Henry began mopping up the puddles of water. All at once, he slipped and banged against the kitchen table. Everything came crashing down. Henry was covered with pots and pans and food. The supper was ruined. This is the tragic part of the book. The supper was ruined. There was nothing Henry could do now but to call Clara and tell her not to come. While Henry was talking on the telephone, the towel came loose from the pipe. The water came shooting out and flooded the whole house. Henry was carried right out the front door by the flood. There was no going back. Poor Henry's house was washed away by the flood. He saved what he could and moved into a new house. When Henry was settled in his new house, he again asked Clara over for supper. Just as he went to the door to let Clara in, he saw an ant. He looked the other way. The end. Robert Quackenbush, Henry's awful mistake. Thus endeth the lesson of Henry's awful mistake. However, thus just beginneth the lesson of Henry's awful mistake. Because maybe you haven't beaten your house to its destruction with a hammer to try to get an ant out of it. but it certainly feels familiar to me. The way Henry wants to solve his minor problem by larger and larger and more destructive means. Get that hammer, miss your target, bust the pipe, flood the house, knock over everything in the kitchen. Pretty much the way I approach 90% of my problems. That was a pipe. Of all the things you have done in your life, which is the one you would most like to undo? Sometimes there are mistakes that we've made that replay in our minds, like a matinee that seems to come up at the most inconvenient and annoying times, like when you're trying to get to sleep at night. We all have something, probably a long list of somethings, that we crave the ability to retcon, to pick up the story as we would like it to be now, editing out the regrettable, lamentable, painful parts of our existence. I knew of a guy in Kannapolis 20 years ago who had sustained permanent injuries in an accident. And from his hospital bed, he told his adult nephew, whom I did know, that one of the biggest challenges that he had to deal with was that he could still picture with absolute clarity the split second in which he had made a very poor and irresponsible decision and the microsecond in which he executed it. Those are the times when we confront the incontrovertible truth that retcon is not an option. Charles M. Schulz was the creator and, for all 50 years that it was produced, the sole writer and artist of the Peanuts cartoons, about as all-encompassing a cultural phenomenon as anything that came out of the 20th century. Late in his life, when, according to a biographer, the thought of his mortality had begun to weigh heavily on Charles Schulz, he and his wife were attending a banquet or something somewhere, and they went in and were seated at a large round table, and he and the elderly woman next to him introduced themselves to one another, and she says, "Charles Schulz, that's kind of a nice name, isn't it?" He said, "Well, I never really thought about it." She said, "Isn't that the name of the fellow who's the cartoonist?" And then there was a slight pause, and she said, "He's dead, isn't he?" I would imagine that was a moment they would both like to retcon. Jesus was moving inexorably, determinedly, toward Jerusalem, toward the cross on which he would give his life for the sins of the world. That phrase means many, many things. Never effectively narrowed down and agreed upon despite 20 centuries of theological overconfidence in our ability to speak in certainties about what God does or how God is who God is. Jesus looked over that lost, lonely, bewildered, and bewildering city, just like us, in need of redemption in its life and its religion, in its politics and its ethics, its history and its future. Maybe each one of us is a Jerusalem in need of redemption in our own life and our own religion and our own politics and ethics and our own history and our own future. Or maybe, just like Jerusalem, that's the problem. That we think all of those things are, quote, our own, as if we were not responsible in each one of them to the world, as well as to ourselves and to God. And the one who came to redeem rather than to retcon, said according to Luke, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often have I desired to gather your children together as a mother hen gathers her brood under her wings. Among the many amazements about the temple in Jerusalem is the idea that it was understood both as a model and the enactment of the most complete concept of the world, which is to say the union of heaven and earth. I believe, says Psalm 27, that I shall see the goodness of the Lord, the heavenly realm, in the land of the living, the realm of earth, the solid earth, with its people and its systems and its dirt and its realities. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. I believe that I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. The Jungian scholar James Hollis has written, most days we are simply stunned, stuporous, and frightened into compliant corners of being. But sometimes, he says, sitting on the side of a slope, we gaze at the stars and see patterns there, feel kinship with those twinkling gaseous spheres racing farther from us by the millisecond, and register wonder, admiration, awe, a kind of joy, and forget for a moment the stupidities and brutalities of our lot. For a while, this monstrous beast of daily life is left behind, and wonder lifts us toward the larger. One thing I asked of the Lord, that will I seek after, to live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, to inquire in God's temple. For God will hide me in God's shelter in the day of trouble, and will conceal me under the cover of God's tent, and will set me high on a rock. I don't need to ask God to rewrite the story that I have already lived. The mistakes I've made, the wounds I have absorbed, and the wounds I have inflicted. Much as I would like to, I do not need to ask for a retcon. What I need is a Savior who can redeem what I am and what I have been, and what I have done, and what I can be, and what I can do, and my relationships with people, and with the whole human race, and with all of creation. What I need is a God who can give me and the whole world shelter under the wings of a mother hen, who will not turn me away in anger, who will not cast me off or forsake me, much as I deserve it. In a life of mistakes and sorrows, stupidities and brutalities, I seek to behold the beauty of the Lord, to inquire in God's awesome temple, the perfect union of heaven and earth. And I believe that I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living.